Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text number 24.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Ya evam veti purusham prakritim chagunai saha sarvata vartamano pi nasubhuyo vijayate.
One who understands this philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of nature is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. Clear understanding of material nature, the supersoul, the individual soul, and their interrelation makes one eligible to become liberated and turn to the spiritual atmosphere without being forced to return to this material nature. This is the result of knowledge. The purpose of knowledge is to understand distinctly that the living entity has by chance fallen into this material existence. By his personal endeavor, in association with authorities, saintly persons, and a spiritual master, he has to understand his position and then revert to spiritual consciousness or Krishna consciousness by understanding Bhagavad Gita as it is explained by the personality of Godhead. Then it is certain that he will never come back again into this material existence. He will be transferred into the spiritual world for an eternal, blissful life of knowledge. Mama jnana timarandusha gananjana shalakaya chakshur udmilitam yena tasmai shi gurave nama. This is wonderful. This is simply wonderful, that just by coming to a proper understanding of this philosophy, one will not take birth again. So one may say, well, that's very good. I don't have to surrender. All I have to do is understand the philosophy, and then I'm liberated. Do not misunderstand what Krishna is saying here. One who actually understands the philosophy will surrender naturally. Someone who does not fully surrender to Krishna has not actually understood the philosophy yet. Their minds are still bewildered, their minds are still confused, they're still thinking, well, maybe Krishna consciousness, maybe sense gratification, etc. So this verse is absolutely true. Anyone who does understand this philosophy will not take birth again because they will fully surrender themselves to Lord Krishna. So how do you get that perfect understanding of the philosophy?
I surrender.
That's right. By surrendering to Krishna. And by following the instruction of Krishna given in the Bhagavad Gita, tadvidi pranipatena paripashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshina. Just try to learn the truth by approaching the spiritual master. Inquire from him submissively, render service unto him. The self-realized souls can impart knowledge unto you because they have seen the truth. So the understanding of the philosophy is imparted to the disciple by the spiritual master, who serves the spiritual master with love and who inquires submissively from the spiritual master. Are there any questions?
What is the mode of material nature and living entity? Can you explain that?
The modes of nature.
What is the meaning of translation? If something mentioned.
The translation says,
one who knows this knowledge,
when you understand this philosophy concerning material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes of nature. Yes, the modes are always interacting with one another in various ways. And the material nature is there, and the living entity is there.
But in the stage when one is not surrendered, how these are acting?
Ah. Well, the modes no longer act upon one who has surrendered to Krishna.
No, but I'm saying those who are not surrendered.
Oh, they're constantly being pulled around by the modes. You know, one minute they're inclined towards spiritual life. They're enthusiastically hearing, Bhagavad Gita class or something, and the next minute they're running off for sense gratification somewhere. You see? The mode of passion. That means they're still under they sometimes have a sattvic tendency, and sometimes they have a rajasic tendency, and sometimes they have a tamasic tendency. That's how the modes are always pulling us this way and that way. They're called ropes, three gunas. Like a puppet has three strings, he's being pulled with this string and that string. So they're pulling in various ways according to our previous karma. The modes are pulling us this way and that way. But the way to get out of the influence of these modes, which are not really doing us a very good service here, they're keeping us entangled in the cycle of birth and death, the way to get out of these modes is to follow the instructions given in the Bhagavad Gita, to follow the instructions given by the bona fide spiritual master, to follow the instructions given by the sadhus, the devotees of the Lord. And then one can actually become free from the influence of these modes of nature. See? Understand?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is said about living entities, something?
Living entity in the verse of the purport.
In the verse.
It doesn't say anything about his suffering. It just says, when one understands this philosophy concerning material nature of the living entity and the interaction of the modes of nature, is sure to attain liberation. He will not take birth here again, regardless of his present position. So, it is an amazing, amazing opportunity.
Is it something like what Kapila Muni did, the analytical studies, so one can do the analytical studies about the living?
Yes, there's some, that's right. To see how the modes of nature are interacting, that is an analytical study of the material nature, and that is helpful to detach oneself from it.
So if one gets that knowledge, so they don't take birth?
If someone understands the philosophy concerning these three things, the material nature, the living entity, and the interaction of the modes, is guaranteed to become liberated. He will not take birth again, no matter where he's at right now. That's what's stated right here.
So if someone understands this, like analytically, just like Kapila Muni was, so that means he's liberated?
I explained this about 10 minutes ago, and I'll say it again. Someone who does not surrender, their understanding is imperfect. Anyone who has a perfect understanding will naturally surrender to Krishna.
So you mean to say that if anyone has understood this mode by analytical studies, cannot be liberated?
Anyone who has understood this fully will obviously be liberated, because they will surrender. If their understanding is partial, then they probably won't surrender. But anyone who has understood it in full, 100% fully realized this philosophy, they will naturally be surrendered, because without surrender, you can't realize it in full. You can realize to a certain extent, but the full 100% you cannot realize unless you surrender. Therefore, anyone who fully understands this philosophy must naturally attain liberation. They wouldn't be able to understand it unless they had surrendered. You understand?
So, regarding this point, what about Jnana Yoga?
When your Jnana becomes perfect, then it must be overcoated with bhakti. Otherwise, your Jnana remains imperfect.
But their idea of perfection is impersonal liberation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why it's stated. But Tanti Yadho, they fell down again. Because their understanding is imperfect of the Absolute Truth. They have an imperfect and incomplete imperfect understanding. So therefore, they take breath again.
It's for sure that they will fall down.
They do. They could progress from that position, but generally they don't. So yeah, they will fall down, that's right. Avruya krishchena param patam tata padanchiro nabhrita nyushmarangraya. You see, they fall down again. You have some question?
It's like, I'm kind of wondering, like, full surrender. You say, like, sometimes you explain it like thoughts, words, and deeds. Is full surrender, right? And
like
thoughts, words, and deeds are full.
Thoughts, words, and deeds.
Yes, that's right.
So, like, I mean, we can say, like, all right, whatever you tell me, I'll do. But still, it's like not full surrender. Like, how to?
The key is love. You can do things begrudgingly, or you can do it. With gratitude and with loving. Not just mechanically, but it's with love. That's what separates the perfected beings from the imperfected beings. That love, that element of love, has to be there. Bhaktya, you must do everything with love. Whatever you're doing to Krishna, you have to do it with love. Not like, oh, I'm being forced to do this. No, with love and gratitude. You understand? Yeah. Any other questions?
Krishna says, by just knowing my form and my pastimes, one will be liberated as well. Krishna says that, right? By knowing him and just...
Janma karma chavayajivyam yevam yavati tatpataha chakpadeha puna janma naitimam muti sor. That's right. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activity does not, upon leaving this body, take his birth again, because he attains to my eternal abode. Yes, so that, again, that understanding means one who knows the transcendental nature, who actually fully knows it, he will naturally be a surrendered devotee, because unless you surrender, you can't fully know it. Not possible. By intellectual power, you can understand the pastimes of Krishna. They are inconceivable. Is it? So if you're really going to know it, you have to be surrendered. We always try to find some way to realize Krishna without surrendering, don't we? Cheating mentality. But if we...
Some people just watch the videos by Ramananda Roy, and they say that they know the stories and everything they know about Krishna.
They watch a Ramananda Roy video and now think they know anything about Krishna. Okay, good luck. Any other points?
Huh?
Huh?
I didn't mean the point. I was saying that that's the remembrance of Krishna, and that's how we remember, or how it happens.
By watching videos?
Yeah, a lot of people watch this video. A lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Some video? What is that video?
Pastimes of Krishna?
Pastimes of Krishna, pastimes of Lord Ram.
Yeah, well, these well, the problem with these videos, the trouble is in them. All these Hindi videos, I mean, it's practically like cartoonish, the way that sometimes they present it. It's not so, but anyway, it's not the deep bhakti spirit. I mean, it's nice, they're remembering Krishna, but it's a money-making thing. That's the problem. It's not done with deep devotion. Professional people who are trying to make money do these things. It's a whole money-making thing. The bhakti, the deep feel, the bhakti is not there in the production, in the actors, in the producers, the script writers. So if such video watching will actually purify you enough to remember Krishna at the time of death, it's highly questionable. It's highly questionable. If you really want to become qualified to absorb yourself in pure bhakti, then you have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and chant the holy name on a regulated daily basis, at least 16 rounds. This is qualification, not watching Hindi videos about Krishna's pastimes. Papa didn't sit around and watch those videos. Nor did he instruct us to.
But isn't it good for someone to know something about Krishna?
Yes, we have our Krishna book. You can know so many details. A lot of times in the movies they put inaccurate things, concocted things that are not even part of Krishna's pastimes. Like the way they portray Narada Muni. I feel so bad, you know. They make him like a cartoon character. Narayan. So the Sikh is sticking up like alfalfa. That American actor, little boy, his Sikh is sticking up in the air. They make him into a cartoon character. That's not Narada Muni. So if somebody sits around watching Narayan, thinking now I'm advanced because I'm watching Narada Muni on my video. Well, good luck. Good luck. Hope you make it at the time of death, because the chances are you won't. If you really want to make it, you have to take shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Any other questions? Yes.
Is Krishna consciousness in Grihastha is considered as a higher platform, or practicing Krishna consciousness in Brahmana is considered as a higher platform?
Brahmachari?
Brahmana,
I said. Yeah,
Brahmana.
Grihastha,
Brahmachari. Okay.
Yeah.
Brahmacharya Grihastha. Actually, it's not so much which ashram you belong to, but it's how well you execute that ashram that determines your advancement. Brahmacharya is always considered advantageous, but once you've made the commitment of family life, you can't go back. Too late. If one is a brahmacharya, it's recommended to remain as a brahmacharya, because household life is in fact very entangling. Very, very entangling. Described as a dark well. But most, in this age, most men end up getting married because the pull of the material nature and the very free interaction of men and women, you know, it makes it difficult to stay brahmachari. Prabhupada told me that actually a brahmachari, he never sees the face of woman. That is actual brahmacharya life. But how you can do that? There are some brahmacharis who do in India. If they see a woman's face, and they fast all day as penance for breaking their vow of seeing a woman's face.
But isn't soul supposed to be more? Isn't soul supposed to see everyone as an atma rather than woman, dog?
But the trouble is, who's completely a sadhu in their heart? Who's on that level that their hormones don't get revved up? You know, their sex hormones don't get revved up if they gaze upon a beautiful woman. You see, who's on that level? You have to be very, very, you have to be like Shukadeva Goswami to be on that level. To where, you know, you don't even see a woman, you just see the Atma. That's a very advanced level we cannot artificially imitate. But Prabhupada said that that's not practical. That standard of not seeing the woman's face is not practical in your country, he said. So he didn't demand that standard. He was just giving what is actually the standard. But it's not practical to do that in this time and place especially. But the real bottom line is the grihastha life or brahmacharya life, they're both favorable if they're properly executed, and they're both unfavorable if improperly executed. Since you're in household life, you should think how to make it perfect. The mood of a brahmachari is required. If the grihastha wants to be successful in his household life, he must have the mood of a brahmachari. That means he only has sex for producing Krishna conscious children. That's primarily what it means. The grihastha who follows that principle is also called brahmachari. He's called grihastha brahmachari. So brahmachari life is the ideal thing. So one can be brahmachari as the grihastha also. That I will have sex only when I want to have a child. That's all. It's not a recreational activity. Just like the farmer, he plants the seed to grow crops. So it is planting of a seed. That's all it is. Sex life is planting of a seed. And when you don't want to have a child, you don't plant seeds for a child to grow. You remain celibate. That's brahmachari life. So one should be brahmachari, either as a householder or as a single man. One should practice brahmachari to only use sex for producing Krishna conscious children. Otherwise, no sex, celibacy. That's difficult if the wife doesn't want to do. But it means you have to become a powerful preacher and convince your wife this is a higher level of happiness than the bodily pleasures. One has to be a very good preacher and liberate the wife if she's not hasn't come to that understanding yet. By liberate her from her sense gratificatory type of thinking. To understand, to enlighten her, transcendental wisdom. Questions more?
Regarding the standards that you're talking about, are the standards different in India and France or West? Is it different? Somebody already said that it's different.
Oh, for brahmacharis?
I mean, yes, standards like that. Somebody already said it's different in India and France.
In this kind?
Yes, but I'm asking.
Not officially. No.
Well, someone's born in India has to follow those standards and not here. Prabhupada gave the standards only for the West. Some kind of
condition. No. No. Prabhupada never made some two sets of standards for Indian born and Western born. Everybody has to come to the same standard. Pure bhakti.
Where did you get this idea?
But if you've been taught it, if you're on a high standard, then you should follow that higher standard. Actually, many of our devotees now in America are very loose standard. We're trying to raise them up to the more traditional standard. We see men and women hugging each other publicly which is completely forbidden. Prabhupada said it's not done. Publicly hugging each other at festivals, not even marriage. It's very improper. There's a lot of things in ISKCON which are not proper. Since Prabhupada has left, a lot of standards have gone way down. So we have to really work hard to set a very good example of proper dealings so that our movement will not be ruined. It won't die. We have to save the movement from death, deviating away from Prabhupada's teachings by being very enthusiastic to follow the actual standards that Prabhupada has given. Questions more?
I read somewhere that before recommended his disciples to chant 64 rounds.
Yes.
And then
Prabhupada also told us to chant 64 rounds.
Right, and then again, Prabhupada again made the change to do 16 rounds at a time.
No, first he gave 64, but nobody could do it. He saw that it just wasn't going to work. He actually told everybody to chant 64 rounds. He said, all right, 32, and they couldn't do that, so he said 16. So, you can chant 64 rounds if you have time. But Prabhupada is very merciful that he'll actually accept, if you chant even the minimum number of 16, and he will accept you into his sampradaya and bless you with his unlimited mercy, even if you only chant 16 rounds, which is a concessionary number of rounds. I have one disciple that we've instructed to chant 64 rounds. She does think he's retired from working job. She had stroke, she can't do anything. She has the whole day. So she's chanting 64 rounds.
One other question is, is it true that in Vedic culture, there was no initiation for the woman
No initiation for the women.
The women would be initiated along with their husband. Yeah, women, for example, didn't have the Brahmin thread. But Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, did give rabbinical initiation to women. Yeah, in former times, the women was considered shudra. The Brahmin wouldn't take his own wife's cooking. He would only eat his own cooking. Formerly, it was like that. But in our Krishna consciousness movement, we actually, because this movement is fully transcendental, you see, that's still seeing on the bodily platform. But this movement is completely transcendental movement, Krishna consciousness movement. So we actually see men and women equally, although we have to be separate because we're not fully realized on the spiritual level. We keep some separation, but we see many women equally. Both men and women are equally potent as preachers. A preacher of Krishna consciousness, that is a transcendental position beyond the varnashram system. Preacher. One who is dedicated for pushing for this movement. They're beyond the varnashram consideration. And in our movement, our men and women are equally empowered as preachers. How much they want to take advantage of that empowerment, that's up to their own purity. The only thing that holds anyone back is their lack of Krishna consciousness. Nothing else. There's no question of being held back because I have this particular gender or this particular nationality. To see someone in terms of their gender or their nationality, they are considered, that vision is considered that the person is a resident of hell. If they see a person, if they discriminate against a person because of their nationality, their gender, their age. Someone who sees in terms of the body, they are considered a resident of hell. Questions more? One more question, that's it.
We were talking the other day, like, to remain brahmachari or brahmacharini, you have to remain very steady, very fixed and focused on what the goal is.
Oh, yes, you do.
How to do that, and like what the proper way of interaction or lack of interaction between male and female devotees.
The best thing is do it for business only, not for pleasure. Basically, if your duty requires you to have some interaction, you do that.
That has to be in public.
Yeah, but it could be a chorus, could be maybe a telephone call. You know, some reason. I mean, yeah, it shouldn't be meeting in private. I mean, sometimes you may, you know. I mean, you're going to be at the temple for a few days. You'll be manning the fort there. Someone may call. You're answering the phone. So a brahmachari might call the temple and you're on the phone talking with a brahmachari. Brahmachari, brahmacharini on the phone. So you just do it as you just dutifully act. It's a representative of the temple. You do your business and you move on with your service. But you don't get into some intimate thing, you know, chuckling and where did you join? And, you know, get into a whole thing, you know. You just do intimate buddy-buddy sort of thing with men.
So it seems like that can quickly slide from, like, straight business to, like, talking about, like, philosophy or something like that. Like, how to, like, avoid that from happening or to, like...
And just do it as... Then just minimize your interaction. Just the bare minimum. What Prabhupada said in that letter was talk almost nil. That's, you remember the letter. Talk, exact quote, talk almost nil. That's the way to do it. Just keep it as bare minimum as possible. When you have an unmarried woman and an unmarried man, and you're wanting to maintain, you know, brahmachari, brahmacharini, then you can't. Cupid is standing there with his quiver, just waiting for you to open up, and he's ready to just, you know, completely saturate your heart with arrows. He's ready. He's got all these arrows of lust, just waiting. If you get a little bit loose and a little casual, and he's ready and waiting.
It's hard coming from Western culture. It's like you've been at the, like,
right.
And then it's like going into this, it's like, oh my goodness.
Right. No, it's difficult. It's a very difficult... That's why most devotees end up getting married, because it's just a very difficult thing to do. It's not an easy thing, because the way we interact in the material society is, you know... I mean, there's absolutely no restriction. Everything's just like, you know. So it's not an easy thing. Not an easy thing, but if you want to, you're asking how to do it. Well, you have to just pray for the ability to do it.
Well, then you cannot think about that I'm coming from this background or that background if I want to do it.
You just have to. The positive way You can look at it from the negative state, what I shouldn't be doing. What you have to do is just find a new place of happiness and joy. It doesn't depend on buddy-buddy with the boys, basically. You have to find a new place. You have to become a transcendentalist. You know, you have to find a place in your heart where you have your relationship with your guru, you have your service. You have to just really be, what is the word? You have to internalize your ecstasy to a great extent by developing your knowledge, developing your expertise in doing service, developing your, strengthening your relationship with the deities. In this way, as long as you're getting your happiness from buddy-buddying with the boys, your brahmacharini life will come to it, will not last very long, just by nature. In due course, you just the biological functions are there. The mind is connected. There is a connection between the mind and the biological nature of your body also. So, you will be pulled and influenced if you're not strong in your determination. It will happen in due course. Not today, tomorrow, or next week, or next year. It will eventually happen. So, just by the nature of this material existence. So you have to be really transcendental. If you want to remain as a Brahmacharini, you have to be very, very transcendental. You have to find deep happiness within.
It's not only buddy-buddy also. You're just seeing someone from distance and you just go wishy-wash on that person opposite sex. Your mind will be diverted to that person also. And that has, we have seen that happen already.
Yeah, just even in the mind.
Seeing and hearing, you may not be going close enough also.
In your mind you take them close. That's another thing. It's got to be really...
Oh, that man is singing very nicely. Oh, that person is... Oh, that woman is doing... That's how nice everything. I just love it.
The thing to do is that understand the reality that because of your conditioning, it's going to be tormenting you, but you have to just deal with it. You have to understand it's basically a mental disease. You have to look at it like, well... I've mixed so freely with men growing up in American culture, and my nature is just like to be real, want to be real close with them, and always mixing them in a real close, intimate way. But I know the downside of that for my spiritual life. So now I want to learn how to distance myself from that tendency, and that will take years of dedicated endeavor for you to become strong in that. It'll take years of dedicated endeavor, but I guarantee you, it's worth it. It's worth it.
We can discuss things with her alone then?
Yeah, we can have a meeting to talk about it more. He has to go. He has to head out to Aniston. But we can have more talks about these things. Help you become strong in Brahmacharini life. Tapasa Brahmacharina. How you can become strong, Brahmacharini. And even if it doesn't work out, and even we decide that you should be married, then you'll be a very good wife, because that the Brahmacharini training will make you a good wife also, if that ends up being your ashram. You'll be a very good, happy household woman. Okay. All right. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.